You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
If you want critics to take your movie seriously, bookend your film with a nice quote. Extra points if you actually have one of your characters narrate it. Super extra big points if you do someone classy like John Steinbeck. Now, I'm more of an Irma Bombeck person myself because I like my quotes to be funny. But Steinbeck will do in a pinch. I mean, hey, he wrote The Grapes of Wrath. That's solid, right? So, obviously, you are dealing with a high-caliber filmmaker. Because this movie that we are discussing this evening, Run with the Hunted, does in fact begin and end with a quote from the aforementioned John Steinbeck, which is a clear way of a writer-director, John Swan, informing us that this is a very serious film. Whether or not we felt the same way about it is what we're here to discuss, and I am joined by my other fellow experts in film. Adrian, how you doing, man?
Hey, pretty good.
Great, and then Santiago's joining us as well.
Greetings from tortured Middle America.
The best kind of Middle America. There's only three of us here tonight, but I don't think more of us would be necessary to break this film apart. As I mentioned earlier, this is a film by writer-director John Swan. He is from Oklahoma, and he made a film set in and around Tulsa called Run with the Hunted, sort of a dramatic thriller about a young boy who commits a murder to protect his best friend. This is not a spoiler. This happens in the first few minutes of the film. His best friend, a girl named Lou, is being abused by her white trash horrible father. Realizing that he's done something terrible, our protagonist, Oscar, at the age of 13, is now a murderer, and he runs away from home and does what every good kid has ever done when they run away from home. They go to the big city, where they fall in with a eccentric gang of pickpockets. It's like Oliver, but, you know, without any music and no exclamation marks at the end of the title. It's trying to be a portrait of Middle America and of consequences of our actions. But I'm going to just cede the floor to you guys a little bit.
You brought up a tip earlier about bookending a movie with a quote. I also have a tip. If you want us to take your character seriously, your main character, don't give him the dumbest fucking haircut. Michael Pitt has this, some kind of rat is just like sitting on his head. And it was so distracting to me.
It wasn't quite as bad as cornrows, but yeah, long, stringy hair.
That's the only thing it was missing.
And he had like the little neck tattoo. Again, it's a case of an actor really trying to transform himself. And Michael Pitt is a good actor and a very good-looking man. And yet, the whole movie, I kept thinking, wow, this is like, I haven't seen this Justin Bieber phase, but you know this Justin Bieber phase happened. You know, like one of his friends said, Justin, don't go out in public like that. You kind of look like Jared Leto in Suicide Squad without the white face paint. It's a bad look. You shouldn't do it. But nobody listened because apparently no one cares about hair and makeup in this film. I should explain that there is a big time jump. We meet Oscar as a child. We see the event that precipitates him running away from home. He has a very brief conversation with his dad, played by the always wonderful character actor that I really like, William Forsythe. Then we never see William Forsythe again. The kid runs away to the big city, meets what, Mark Boone Jr.? What's that dude's name? He's like in Sons of Anarchy.
No, you're right. That's Mark Boone Jr. who's playing.
Mark Boone Jr. He meets this girl named Peaches. Basically, it's like a Oliver Twist sort of thing where he falls into Fagin, you know, like a professional pickpocket who has all these like homeless kids that he teaches how to commit crimes. And then there's a big 15-year time jump. And boy, things get weird after that time jump, because it becomes a totally different movie with a shocking lack of continuity in regards to how characters age.
Yeah, Ron Perlman is in this in both time periods, and he looks exactly the same for both.
I can only assume they're like, look, Mr. Perlman is very busy. You only have him for 2 days, and he's contractually obligated to keep his hair and this way. You can't dye it. You can't shave the beard. Probably on like a break from some other movie he's in. He just flew in to do this scene. Isaiah Whitlock Jr. is in this. I mean, this is a really solid cast by a filmmaker whose work I'm not terribly familiar with. But Adrian, I think you said you saw one of his previous films.
Yes, the one right before this, Let Me Make You a Martyr or something like that. It has Marilyn Manson, and it is just as dry and meandering, yet it's just as short. When this movie started, I actually thought I put the wrong screener in, even though I had like seen the title. I didn't realize it was going to be like, oh, this is kind of a two-part saga in a way of young and old. It's not so much like that, but it sure does feel like it. At just maybe like an hour 33, this kind of took a while.
It is very languidly paced, and as we find out, the character of Oscar has now, as an adult, he's now basically in charge. He's kind of replaced the Mark Boone character. And he's now the guy whose job it is to bring these kids on into their little group, show them how to, you know, pick pockets, show them how to run cons, and then later they graduate to things like robbing grocery stores and things. It turns out that his friend Lou, the little girl who was being abused in the first portion of the film, she and her younger brother have come back to Tulsa, and in a rather confusing subplot that I was never completely sure of their motivations, they decided to come back and find their missing friend, because once the kid ran away, Oscar was never found. He didn't run very far away, but for the past 15 years, he's just considered lost. But they somehow have picked apart all the clues and figured out which organization he's working for that's run by Ron Perlman, and he's got connections to, like, state senators and things, and apparently he's a big deal, but he also needs to, like, he can have drinks with a senator, but then also has a group of, like, urchins who, like, pick pockets for him? Because that's a great career model for a professional criminal, apparently?
I'm sitting here shaking my head. I just keep doing that. I can't help but do it because this story just doesn't make any sense. Like, I have to admit, Ron Perlman's character is very confusing to me because it seems like he knows something that we don't, and maybe it's just, you know, what he's going to do after he's done filming this next scene. I want to go back to just how bad the performances were. Perlman and Boone Jr. have interesting chemistry, which I'm sure that they spent years honing on Sons of Anarchy. I didn't even like that show, but I will say that it had some mentions that were worth mentioning. You know, yeah. Both their performances seem phoned in and uninspired. There's even a scene where it appears that Boone Jr. forgets to react to a gunshot wound. I don't know if he gave that gunshot wound the French pause, but I was just sitting there wondering, like, is the movie frozen? But no, he was literally just forgetting to react, it seems. And then it makes some lackluster attempts to be profound. I mean, the obvious influences to Oliver Twist and even directly quoting The Grapes of Wrath at both ends of the film were, I think, just gratuitous. They were desperate attempts.
I mean, his director's statement from the press notes indicates that he's a fan of, and he name drops, you know, Jim Thompson, Elmore Leonard, cult 70s cinema, you know, shows like Straight Time, Getaway, Electroglide and Blue, French Connection, and contemporary filmmakers like Jeff Nichols. Based on that alone, I'm intrigued, because that's an interesting mix of influences. But I don't find the same merit here. It's the right influences. I don't think it's even a bad story. I just think that it is underdeveloped. This is like a couple drafts away from being more than adequate. Isaiah Whitlock Jr. is in this. I mean, and you know, that guy does great stuff. If you've seen him in stuff like, you know, The Wire, or The Five Bloods, which came out recently, he's a great character actor. And he has a nice little scene with Ron Perlman. But then it ends. And I'm like, wait a minute, what happened to that guy? He is a private detective who apparently back in the day was like investigating the Ron Perlman character, but it turns out they have a past together. The friend Lou, the little girl from the beginning, now she's an adult. She takes a job with him because I never understood. It's like, did you take a job with this guy just so you could go through his files? That's never very clear. Meanwhile, her brother's back at the hotel with the big conspiracy board. It's like, are you here to locate your long-lost friend who saved you from a terrible father and then disappeared? Or are you here to bring down, like, a criminal mastermind? I don't get it. And then at one point, the Michael Pitt character shows up and is kind of really shitty to them, and like, and then he disappears, and then he comes back, and it's like, oh, we're good now. It's like, this is a movie where nobody talks to one another at the right time. It's like, you knew the daughter was being molested by the father. Did it never occur to you, maybe you should go tell your parents? Because what we see, the parents love him. He has a good home life. He's not like a bad kid. He's like, nope, I'm just going to go take this into my own hands and murder this guy. And that's what precipitates his running away. It just never adds up.
I think it's like a, they're very bland attempts to be profound. I think, you know, the influences that you mentioned, I think they all attempt to capture an idea. And maybe it's the idea that some people just fall through the cracks of society and maybe they also have a story to tell. To be fair, I mean, I think that William Forsythe gives Oscar's character some bit of advice before he goes off and kills the neighbors, something along the lines of, you know, ensuring the betterment of other people. It was very vague. I think it was a scene where William Forsythe was like, all right, I got about 15 minutes in this film. I'm going to say something really profound, and you may or may not forget it later on in the movie.
I kind of forgot it, because none of it sounded like, it sounded like sometimes, you know, you have to do the right thing, and you have to take matters in your own hand. He seemed like a loving father who even warned the kid about going to this horrible household where their terrible people live. I think if you went back and told your dad, hey, you know that fucking white trash bastard you told me was bad news to stay away from? Turns out he is bad news. You were right. He's molesting his daughter. Dad could have done something. But no, Oscar takes it into his own hands because otherwise there's no movie.
It really did feel like the guy who directed Mud,
Jeff Nichols.
It feels like maybe like one of his first ever movies. It definitely feels influenced by him because it's like very down to earth, very ambient in the way that it's shot. I'll give the soundtrack some credit. I think it has a good ambient soundtrack. And even in terms of acting, I didn't think anyone was that great, but I thought the kid actors were actually really good, which is not usually what I'm saying with movies. I was actually surprised with how good of a job they did.
You touched on something that I think is worth noting, because you're right. The child performers are overall pretty good. I mean, they all look a little too clean and put together to be like a bunch of ragamuffins who steal from people, presumably homeless and probably on drugs. But they all seem like cute 90s kids. And I was okay with that movie until we have this huge time jump. And now, you know, our lead is like, basically, he looks like Michael Pitt now, with the long black greasy hair and the neck tattoos and shit. The character Peaches is like kind of drugged out and a stripper. I didn't buy the transition. Yeah. I know a lot can happen in 15 years, but to me, it's like, you either give me more of that story in the front with the kids, or, you know, you spend a little more time with the adults explaining to me how they got there. But it's such a big leap. Other than the names, I didn't make any connection between those characters and their past selves.
I would say especially the character Peaches.
Yeah.
We need some backstory on how she ended up the way that she is in the second half of the film. They kind of hint at there's something kind of going on with her and another character. But even then, it's like, it's so vague. Not vague in the way that like Blade Runner 2049 is vague, but if you pay attention, you can figure it out. This feels like the last episode of a series that we just happened to catch on TV, and we now need to watch all the rest of it to get all the clues that we missed out on.
I mean, John Swab, the writer-director, says, I don't think this is autobiographical, but he does say, you know, when he was a kid, he was a runaway, he had some of these problems, he was concerned about these things, and he wanted to reflect that experience in a story on film. I think this is a case of a director who has a very strong connection to his material and knows it so well that he forgets we don't know what he's talking about because we haven't lived his life. You still have to show it to us. So all of these character traits might seem very obvious to him, but if you don't show that to me, then I can't make that connection. He's like, oh yeah, that person was like that because it's based on a person I knew. I'm like, well, I don't know that person, so I can't make that connection. It's a case of, I'm not asking you to like spoon feed me this material, but you have to give your audience a way to enter the world you're trying to depict. And I don't think he does a good enough job of that.
I think that's accurate. The story, as you mentioned previously, isn't bad. The film seems like snippets from what could have been like a series. Like, there's all these parts missing. And I will say that the film gets a couple of points from me for good location scouting. And just like, as Adrian said, it does have a good ambient soundtrack. And I do feel like they have kind of nailed the look. There's like a bleak sepia-colored tone to the town that they inhabit. And I really kind of thought that was cool. And save for Michael Pitt's appearance, the one good thing I will say about this movie, it looked cool.
You touched on something that I think is the strength of this movie. And I have a feeling by the end of this review, we're not going to have a very good rating for this film. However, I am curious to see what this guy, John Swab, does next. This is like his third or fourth feature, I think. He's already got something in post-production, and he has something in pre-production. But there's one thing he does in this movie that I do not see in a lot of other films, and I really appreciated that. And that is the strong regional sense. A lot of movies, especially like American-made movies, they always seem to take place either in a large metropolitan city on the east or west coast, or it's some like any town USA. And it all kind of looks flat and the same because we've seen it all before, because they're always shooting in the same towns, wherever the tax incentives are. HBO's Watchmen was set in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And they didn't shoot it in Tulsa. They shot the whole thing in Georgia because that's where the studios and the tax breaks and the talent was. This guy's from Tulsa. This film is unapologetically set in Tulsa. They're not trying to make it look like someplace else. You get a wide shot of the city skyline. They address the fact that it all takes place in Tulsa. And I appreciate that because I've never seen a town quite like that. You know, whereas if they just shot it in Vancouver or Georgia or somewhere in California, it would look like every other movie I've ever seen. So I give credit to this guy for really bringing a strong sense of place to a movie that didn't necessarily need it.
I think we've pretty much covered everything with the exception of, well, the ending of the movie, which, you know, we shouldn't reveal, but you've turned me quite a little bit, Marco. I feel like I am a little bit curious about what this director has done. I am curious about the movie that Adrian said he saw with Marilyn Manson, just because I've never even heard of that.
Why don't you go into your final thoughts on that?
This film was disappointing, to say the least. It was really difficult to get through because I wanted it to be so much more. I do think that the idea is cool, and I think that there's potential here for, like, an entire series, especially considering the strong cast, which is very cool. I was excited to see William Forsythe. Everybody in it has done great things that I've seen in the past. However, unfortunately, the plot is confusing, underwhelming, and, well, I'll just leave it at that. The film does get a couple points from me just for good location scouting. I think that Tulsa looked cool as heck, and even while Michael Pitt looked out of place in that setting, I feel like he kind of, you know, did blend in some way, shape, or form as being just like a half-cocked version of, well, a broken society. That said, the film gets a 2 out of 10 armed little orphans from me.
Adrian, what you gotta say?
I do like the child performances. I think they're a highlight. In fact, there's a scene where Michael Pitt cuts an X into his arm, and the reaction seems so genuine. It kind of felt like they didn't tell the kids that that's what was about to happen. And that's kind of like a really funny scene to me, which I'm not sure if it was supposed to be funny. It probably wasn't. Overall, this feels like one of those first-time indie movies that you see at a festival, but unfortunately, it's not a first-time indie movie. This is already the director, I want to say his third film. It still seems like he has some catching up to do, but there's definitely potential. If you like dark indie movies that kind of have this Jeff Nichols / Derek Cian France type vibe to them, you may dig this, but it's just really not enough, unfortunately. Check it out if it's on Netflix, and if you really, 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 really like Michael Pitt, because I do, and that's kind of what made me want to see this. I would give this 2 X's on your arm to scare kids out of 5.
The thing that most appealed to me about this film, when all was said and done, was that strong sense of regionalism. And I believe every second watching this film that this is a guy from Tulsa. He knows where the shots are. I mean, this is not like a visually dazzling movie, don't get me wrong. It's not like a lot of razzmatazz. He's doing a fairly conventional drama with a few little thriller elements in it that don't always blend in well with the drama because, as I said earlier, some of the motivations are murky and poorly defined. I think there's a lot of potential in this filmmaker. I'm curious to see what he does next. As Adrian said, it is his third feature, I believe, and he's already got one in post-production, and he's got another one in pre-production. So the guy's not losing any time. He's hitting the ground running, and he's clearly shown that he can attract a lot of good actors to a project. And that gives me a lot of hope that one day we're going to see a really good film from this guy. Unfortunately, it wasn't this one. A lot of that potential just never manifested itself. I'm going to give this 3.5 out of 10 stolen bits of jewelry. Now we're going to go on to the pickpocketing session. I hope you guys have all studied because I'm going to be testing you all. Now, all of you have to reach across the room and pick my wallet without me noticing.
Your what?
My wallet. Hey, that's not my wallet!